Good evening, everyone. You're in the right place at the right time. This is Coast to Coast AM, blasting out of the Mojave Desert like a Scirocco, blazing across the land, into your town, into your home, slamming into your radio like a supercharged nanoparticle of unobtainium. Greetings to all of you from the boldest, bawdiest, most outrageous city in the world, the planetary capital of sun, fun, sin, sex, and secrets, my not-so-humble hometown, Las Vegas, Nevada. My name is George Knapp, your occasional host, designated driver of the airwaves, and moderator of tonight's upcoming cacophony of conversation. Happy that you chose to spend some time with us tonight. This evening, we focus our attention on two of the most powerful and most profitable corporate behemoths in the world. Two industries that sell products that every single one of us use every single day. Two industries that have used their Godzilla-sized political influence to maximize their profits and to limit oversight, whether it's good for the general public, their customers, or not. You know, we often address conspiracy theories of one type or another on this program, whether it involves shadowy entities or organizations, government agencies, the military-industrial complex, those three-letter intelligence outfits who play mind games with us, and assorted other threats, real or imagined, to our safety and to our liberty. The issues we examine tonight are not faraway theories, not spooky stories that might someday invade our lives. These issues are here, now, in your home and in my home, and the consequences are very real. What's happened to family farms in this country is an outrage. Tens of thousands of family farmers have gone under. They're gone. For various reasons, because of the economy or drought, greedy banksters, excessive regulation, or because the gigantic agribiz conglomerates have taken over, squeezed them out, farming and ranching on an unimaginable scale, but at what cost? Not only has big ag been deadly to family farming operations, but it's given us Frankenfoods and GMOs, anti-competitive policies that have the force of law. It's led to corruption of local and I think federal authorities who supposedly watch over these factory farms. And maybe worst of all, they've made a mess of our food. I'm a guy who likes tomatoes, you know, and they have created tomatoes that can be harvested by machines, very convenient and economical. But these things taste like cardboard. Soybeans, they're now patented. And woe to the farmer who accidentally has some patented soybeans on his property, even by accident, because Monsanto will hunt them down. Our fruits and vegetables are doused with super sprays designed to kill pests of all kinds, weeds, bugs, but the residue gets into our environment and into our bodies. And then there's meat. We don't even want to think about meat. We pretend that, you know, somehow it just sprouts out of the ground or something, that, you know, happy farm workers pick strips of bacon from trees, that chicken McNuggets and hamburgers grow on vines like berries or something. There is a major disconnect between how meat is produced, where it comes from, and that moment when it lands on our plate. I think the meat industry counts on this. They don't want you to ask too many questions about meat or think too much about what it is that you're eating. That situation's not good for you. It's not good for your family. It just simply isn't. As you might know, investigative journalists and animal welfare organizations have tried to shine light on big meat. You've seen probably the stories on 60 Minutes and programs like that, read about it in newspapers. These guys infiltrate the meat industry. They bring back the evidence. They have video and photos of absolutely horrible, deplorable conditions, unimaginable cruelty. And I mean horrible for the animals, but also horrible for you. Terms of sanitation, the chemical additives and poisons and stuff they pump into these animals, or worse. The exposés that have been made by these intrepid investigators have made a difference. People have gone to jail for unimaginable cruelty. Millions of pounds of contaminated meat have been recalled and then trashed. It wouldn't have happened without these investigations. You would have eaten this stuff. Or it would have gone into the school lunch program and your kids would have eaten it. So now, big meat is fighting back. They're using their vast influence and good old-fashioned juice, and by that I mean money, to sort of handcuff anyone who wants to expose what they're up to, what they're doing. This is called euphemistically ag gag laws. Basically, they try to make it illegal for anyone to take photos or video or to infiltrate and do undercover work at these factory farm operations. And it's not just to stop stories about horrible abuses of animals. Also, it quashes investigations into such things as threats to worker safety, sexual exploitation, evidence of embezzlement or other financial infractions, all sorts of outright crimes. In at least three states, it's now a crime to take video or photos of a farming operation. It's a crime. It applies to journalists like me or to activists working undercover. Even you as a tourist, you're driving by one of these operations, you stop and take a photo of a cow in a field, go to jail. It's outrageous on many levels, not the least of which is the First Amendment freedoms that are supposedly at the heart of our republic, something that we believe in, freedom of the press, freedom of speech. Hard to believe that these kind of laws could pass constitutional muster, but they have been approved in a couple of states and more are on the way. Tonight, we take a hard look at big ag and big meat, and we'll hear from those who've been on the front lines of this fight. Wayne Pacelli, who's the national president of the Humane Society of the U.S., has been my guest a couple of times on the program, has made it one of his top priorities to conduct these undercover investigations into criminal operations and to let us know exactly what we're eating, what our dollars are supporting. It's made a huge difference for animals and for consumers. Wayne will be here in hour two tonight to give us the broad picture, why we need to be vigilant, what big ag is up to at the national level and in various state capitals, what you need to know to protect your family and to make sure that what you're eating is you're not supporting, you know, obscene and completely unnecessary cruelty. Then in hours three and four, two guys have been on the front lines of this fight. Cody Carlson has worked as an undercover operative at some of the sleaziest and most despicable family farms in the country. He's brought back the kind of proof that people need to see, but probably don't always want to think about. And Matt Dominguez, who specializes in fighting back against ag gag proposals and attempts by factory farms to keep the public in the dark, sort of like the chickens and pigs that end up on our plates. But coming up in this hour, we look at a different sort of corporate conspiracy. Millions of Americans are looking to renewable energy sources, clean alternatives to fossil fuels at some point in the future, maybe some right now. Solar plants are sprouting up all over the West. We got a couple of really big ones here in Nevada that are, one of them is already operating, producing power, another one about to go online later this year. These solar plants are popping up in other places of the world. Saudi Arabia is investing hundreds of millions of dollars into a massive conversion of its country to solar energy. You got to remember, when the world's largest oil power starts moving in the direction of solar, it makes a pretty powerful statement. But I think the real hope for a lot of folks in this industry with solar is for each of us to have our own solar collectors, not only helping to control the cost of electricity because we're generating our own, cut into the monthly bills, but generate some income by selling excess power back to the grid. But it also gives us a certain amount of energy independence. You could have a power plant on your roof. Needless to say, the massive electrical power industry is not all that thrilled by this prospect. If the world's going to move to solar power, I think they want to control it. Preposterous as that might sound, control the sun. So around the country, big money and political juice are lining up to sort of roll back the momentum that's building for solar and other renewable sources, to slap on extra fees and charges for anyone who wants to use their own money to put solar panels on their roof or elsewhere on their home. They want to make sure that 50 years from now, most of us are, if we're using renewable energy, we still have to buy it from their monopolies. Joining me in just a minute to tell us where things stand in that fight is Dane Wigington. He's a veteran of the solar energy wars, and when it comes to solar, he's put his own money where his mouth is. He knows what's at stake for all of us. He was here last year and spoke to George Norrie about geoengineering and chemtrails. Tonight, he'll fill us in on the solar energy conspiracy and what we can do to fight back. By the way, in case any of you have sent me an email in the last couple of weeks, I want to let our listeners know I'm having problems with my Coast email account. Nearly all the emails that I've been sending out, and I am responding to things that you send me, are not being delivered. They bounce back to me. So don't want you to think I'm ignoring all those emails. The technical folks at Coast are working on it. Hope to have the problems fixed by later this week. So please be patient, and I promise I'll get back to you in time with all those emails you've been sending. Quick news note, in a word, tornadoes. CNN reporting tonight that tornadoes have ripped through the central U.S., damage widespread from severe weather. 8 confirmed casualties, or excuse me, fatalities in Arkansas, 1 fatality in Oklahoma. Massive damages reported in those states, and we certainly hope all of our listeners in those states are safe and hunkered down in your homes. Webmaster Tim Binal and I put together a couple of items that we hope will be of interest to you, posted on the Coast website in the NAPS News section. One of the articles is related to our guest from last night. In case you were not able to join us, we had a program, spoke with a researcher whose book contends that Nazi dictator Adolf Hitler did not die in his Berlin bunker after all. The anniversary of Hitler's death comes up later this week. The writer, his name is Harry Cooper, he thinks Hitler escaped and made it to South America. Well, after the program aired last night, we received some additional information that we did not have prior to that interview. And for those of you who heard the program last night, or those of you who are, maybe you're a Coast insider, you're going to listen to it later on a delayed basis, you might want to take a look. The article is titled Touring the Third Reich. Also under NAPS News, as a preview to our first hour guest, an item about the state of Oklahoma, which just recently took action regarding solar energy. It's an eye-opener about the kind of tactics that have been used so far in this struggle. More to come, I'm sure. Two stories there that relate to our upcoming discussion about factory farms and big ag. There's a heartbreaking account about suicide rates among farmers. It's twice the national average. No wonder. And an excellent overview story from Rolling Stone magazine, which frames the central issues about factory farms and animal cruelty and food safety. And you'll notice it profiles some of the same people who we will be speaking to later tonight. Another item, a very thoughtful examination about how far overboard the U.S. has gone, supposedly in this fight against terror, what it's cost all of us, where it might be heading. And then just to lighten things up, there's a video of some flying robots, these musical drones, sort of like a robot band. Pretty amazing, a fun diversion. You'll know it when you see it. Check out those stories and a lot more on the Coast website. We have a lot of ground to cover, so let's get right to it. Time now for our first break, and in a moment, Dane Wigington and the fight over solar power. I'm George Knapp, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to the program. Dane Wigington has an extensive background in solar energy. His personal residence was featured in a cover article on the world's largest renewable energy magazine, Home Power. He owns a 1,600-acre wildlife preserve next to Lake Shasta in California. And you might remember he's the lead researcher for geoengineeringwatch.org, which is why he was here last year to be interviewed by George Norrie. Dane, good to have you back on the program.
Good to be here, George. Thanks for your covering of the dire issues that we all face.
Can we? Can you help me frame this, the argument? Can you give me sort of the broad picture about the pushback against the move for solar energy?
What's it always come down to, George, is power and control, correct? I mean, this is the bottom line that everybody's always had to face, and now that more and more people are realizing they have this alternative, we would expect the same players as the Koch brothers and other people in the industries that have always tried to have the noose around our necks. Now they want it around our necks in this particular arena, and they come up with a lot of reasons to instigate this control, but those reasons don't really hold water.
Are you familiar with how it went down in Oklahoma? The House in Oklahoma had passed this thing, had no debate on an SB 1456 that slapped some sort of an additional fee on solar panels that you'd put on your roof or small wind turbines. How did they pull this off? Do you know?
Well, the same way they always do with legislation like this, they pass it through and nobody's looking. But you know, the excuses they give again, that there's some sort of extraordinary cost for those that want to feed solar back into the grid system, that somehow that burdens utility companies, and that just simply doesn't hold water. The amount of power that flows into a residence without solar would generally far exceed anything that residence could pump back into the system. So they're not overburdening the system. That excuse is nonsense. And when does solar produce the most power? It's during the middle of the day when the power companies most need it, when they pay the highest rates for their power, and they're not paying the appropriate rates to those who generate power and put it back in the system already anyway. So they're already shorting the solar power user in that regard. But this goes a little farther as they've tried to break the back of the solar system with the solar industry, which these articles don't cover, George. And that is this, that when you have, and relating this to climate engineering, in fact, when you have countries now, if you go back a little further, the Cancun Climate Conference and the Copenhagen Climate Conference, where, incidentally, it's interesting that both those conferences had record low temperatures at the time of the conference, we think a demonstration of geoengineering. But after that, you had NATO countries and so forth, and about 2012, they pulled back on all their solar subsidies, which put a huge brick through the window of the solar industry. And so there's a lot more to this. They've been breaking the back of the solar industry for a long time. So when you connect climate engineering, when you have countries signing on to programs that block the sun, and we're talking about global dimming right now is 22% to 25%, and that has an exponentially higher impact on the solar panels. So I think the mentality is, again, they can control, they're trying to control the weather, which allows them to control the solar industry in a sense, right? I mean, if you're blocking the sun, if you're looking at it from a country or government standpoint, perhaps they figure, why would you pay to block the sun and then pay for a solar subsidy?
Like everything else, I think this issue is over-politicized. We see everything these days through a partisan lens, and there's a lot of folks who are skeptical about the whole global warming climate change thing, and they figure, well, if you're in favor of solar power and it's meant to deflect against global warming, I don't believe global warming. It's Obama and a plot. Therefore, I'm against solar power, when in fact all of us could benefit from this stuff. It really shouldn't be a partisan issue.
Not at all. It shouldn't be. You're right. I mean, it's you really can find no negative in it. But you still, what you have though is the same companies, Koch Brothers or some of the fossil fuel companies that are saying there is no climate problem at all, but yet they're supporting geoengineering. Now that seems a bit of a contradiction of terms. Why would you need geoengineering to block the sun if you don't believe there's any problem with the climate to begin with? And then again, by blocking the sun, you're radically reducing solar uptake. And let me give you an example of that. I mean, this is what started me on this whole train of research into climate engineering. When I moved to the Pacific Northwest, went off grid, and suddenly on certain days when these grid patterns were above my home, I lost 60, 70, even 80% of my solar uptake from strictly what these programs were putting out. So let's just look at this from the solar aspect. If you're losing that much of your solar panel power during some of these days, that's a huge impact, especially when you most need it in the middle of the day. So, again, if we look at the dots when the solar subsidies were cut, about 2012 in that range, and there's plenty of headlines on this if people choose to look it up, and we look at what appears to be the signing on to these sun-blocking programs, that's what it's called, solar radiation management, to block the sun. So then they started to cut the solar subsidies to all the NATO countries. The solar industry sort of went in the ditch, and now they're following that along further by trying to tax it really unjustly because, again, the burden that these houses put back into the system, the amount of electricity that's flowing back into the system, is typically much less than that house would draw through the same conductors going into their home. So they're not overburdening the system at all. And when the solar is most useful is when the power companies most need it. So none of these dots add up. This is simply about power and control and sucking the noose around the necks of those who want to be more independent. That's really what it comes down to.
Talk to me a little bit about your solar experience, what you put in and what it's done to your monthly power bills and how it's worked out for you and your family.
It's worked out great. In fact, I would hate to jinx my good luck here, but huh. I mean, I'm living off-grid in the middle of nowhere. I've had no power outage. None in 12 years. I pump during the summer. I can pump 5,000 gallons a day to irrigate if I choose. I can. I make about 50 kilowatts a day in power. That's a lot. And we have been completely off grid again for about 12 years. Now, it goes. The hydro situation is being hit too with these climate engineering programs. Again, I've spoken in front of the state of California, in front of the California Energy Commission on that issue because they recognize they were losing 20 to 40% of the state's rainfall from, quote, particulates of unknown origin. Well, the state knows where everything's coming from, so it's odd that they would not recognize, you know, these kinds of programs or acknowledge them. But so that's another area of renewable energy that's being hit hard by these programs. And now also, George, if you're familiar with the parabolic mirror solar installations that heat the tube of oil, have you seen those in the Mojave deserts?
Yes, yeah.
So those are hit even harder by the solar obscuration programs, geoengineering. A 3% deflection, because these particles are light deflecting materials, can cause a 20% disruption in their power uptake. So it's renewable energy is being hit all hard all the way around.
Dane Wigington, we're going to take a break. We'll come right back. I want to hear more about your ability or inability to sell power back to the grid with the system you've set up. If I don't even know if that's your setup or not. And sunshine, the power of sunshine, is our topic here in the first hour. We've been joined by Dane Wigington to tell us about his experiences with solar power at his home. When we come back, we'll continue the conversation. I'll open up the phone lines, get a couple of your calls from my guest about solar power as well. Stay with us. Much more to come here on Coast to Coast. Dane, can you tell me a little bit more about your setup? You said you were off the grid. I mean, completely off the grid, completely energy independent kind of a thing, or do you have the opportunity to sell power back to the grid?
I'm completely off grid. I have 3 wind turbines. I have a hydro, and I have about a 9-kilowatt solar system, which is a large system. But you have many regions, it appears increasingly difficult and with increasingly more resistance for people to live off-grid. I'm looking at a headline right now, George. The title of the headline is, this is about a year-old article, is Living Off the Grid Now a Crime? First line in that article, apparently living off the grid, off land, without government assistance is now a crime that can land you in jail and cause you to lose your home. This is a particular circumstance, but you have a few factors that, again, correlate with this power and control situation in the sort of oil industry, Koch brothers, military-industrial complex control of everything, including trying to control our power. It's extremely expensive to extend power lines now, exponentially more, you know, just this is just residential poles and lines, exponentially more than the actual cost of that installation. So on one hand, it seems they're trying to prohibit people from extending such a line into a rural area, and perhaps this fits with the Agenda 21 issue where they're trying to keep people from expanding into rural areas. But if you do happen to connect, then now they're trying to tax you for feeding your energy back into that line that you already just paid for out of your own pocket. Do you follow me on that?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
So it seems a bit of a double taxation on that note. And, you know, there's just the wrench they threw into the works for the solar industry when about March 2nd, 2012, when China really cut its subsidies, and they're engaged in geoengineering as well, blocking the sun. So, again, is that argument there that why would governments decide to stop really pushing solar? Well, is it connected to the fact that they're paying to block the sun? Perhaps at March 18th, 2012, you saw Germany cut their solar subsidies. A lot of the other European countries followed, you know, right about the same time. A lot of these things are happening at about the same time. So it appears, again, it all comes down to power and control. And the cost of the solar panels now, George, they've so broken the industry that panels that once cost about $5 a watt are about $1.20 a watt. And I personally don't know how they can make them sell them for that.
Help me understand in a practical sense what people like a regular homeowner, you know, most of us live in the city. We don't have the kind of acreage that you have, can't put up wind turbines in our front yard. But how realistic is the idea of a solar panels on your roof, what it would mean to the average homeowner, what it would cost to set up a system that could make an impact in your monthly bill?
It makes so much sense for the residential owner, and this is why. When you live off-grid, as I do, you have to have a large battery bank, and that's really the anchor with living off-grid. You know, this is something that's a big expense, and it makes it more difficult. If you live on the grid in a residential area, having a solar system, especially if your roof orientation is correct, is really quite simple, and you don't need the batteries because you have the grid as your battery. So if you're not able to pump power back into the system or feed your own loads, you can just use the grid power. You don't need the battery backup. So it's much more simple, makes a lot of sense. And, you know, there's a certain benefit to the home as well, in that if you're putting these panels on your roof, especially in warmer regions, you're actually providing more insulation from that solar radiation heating your home. So you're deflecting some of that radiant heat, and you're making power from it. And, you know, it makes sense all the way around for the grid power home areas, and it's not putting a burden on the utility systems. And again, even people that are in rural areas that have to pay to run the lines to their homes, which probably serve a lot of other homes at some point too. And if you run such a line, and to give you an example, to run a line a quarter mile might cost you $70,000 or $80,000.
Yeah.
And you know, it's astronomically more than the cost of that installation. The power company might feed multiple homes off the installation you just paid for, and now they're going to tax you for feeding power back into that system, which puts much less of a burden on the system than what you would have drawn through it in the first place.
I first looked at it a couple of years ago. It seemed to me there were some tax credits that would have been available to homeowners. I don't think those still exist. But, I mean, I wonder what kind of a, you know, for a typical home, what your investment would have to be. And even if you can't make any revenue by selling it back to the system, it's still, I would think it would still make financial sense, I guess, in the long run to have the solar panels in a home.
Well, yes and no. But, again, they're doing their best to break the back of this whole industry. And when you have utility companies that will not even pay you the going rate for power you sell back to them during peak hours, you know, they discount that rate down to something that's really not equitable anyway. Now they're going to tax you on top of that, and maybe you paid for the line that extended to your house anyway. And these people are criminals. I mean, the utility companies, I personally was fleeced for about $150,000 from Southern California Edison. Personally, on a line extensions that I put in, that was told I was told I would be reimbursed for this, and their ultimate excuse in a kangaroo court was, well, we shouldn't have written the contract that way, so the reimbursement's off, and sorry. And this is the way the whole system works. So it's corruption from bottom to top. And again, on a bigger scale, you know, it's hard to separate the climate engineering from this issue, because that's when the solar industry really got brought to its knees with the first big blow, and now you have the subsequent blows coming in. But the amount of solar uptake I get, and there's a lot of days where I can't even pump water because of what's happening with the climate engineering overhead. I can't generate enough power to run my well pumps and so forth on an otherwise clear day. So, you know, there's a lot of things coming at the solar industry, and again, it's hard to separate all these components because they all do connect.
Does it make sense for the typical homeowner? I don't know if there is a typical homeowner, but for a typical person living in a city in the West, say, to install one of these systems, 20, 30 grand, something like that?
Well, as things are going, it's making less sense, isn't it?
Yeah,
you know, as
right.
They start to tax and so forth. And then, again, for those that think they're going to get some sort of energy independence from putting the solar panels on their home, they're not, because if the grid shuts down, you have no battery backup, sun goes down, you have no power, period. So it makes less sense. And even for... there are issues with the solar panel industry and I am a fan of solar. I mean, again, it's certainly a good alternative, but there are chemicals put in the air by the production of solar panels. One hexafluorethane is about 12,000 times more potent a greenhouse gas than CO2. Nitrogen trifluoride, about 17,000 times more potent. So it's, even technologies like this are not as green as we would like to think, but it's still a better alternative than anything else we have. And for them to tax the use of these panels that can literally generate tremendous amounts of power, and this is the key point, George, when it's most needed. That's when the grids struggle right. The most, on the hot days, correct?
Yes. So, can you give me a general statement about what's coming down the pike? I mean, what people can do to keep an eye on this or try to join the fight? I would think that the same kind of sneaky tactics we just saw in Oklahoma will be popping up in state legislatures everywhere.
Well, they will. I mean, how many other things do we see in that category? How many things are rifled through under the radar? And anywhere the power structure seems to be losing control over the population, or anywhere there's a population that's able to gain more independence, they're cracking down on that. And we're seeing that, for example, in the region I live in, where I'm off-grid, solar's a great option, great opportunity to have a lot more land for a cheaper price, and you can pump water with it and so forth. So we're seeing them put pretty draconian restrictions, regulations for living off-grid, that they're trying to make it increasingly difficult in certain areas there, as per the headline I just read to you. So it appears they're trying to suck the noose around this mechanism of independence. And we see that in a lot of arenas, don't we?
Man, people got to pay attention to this stuff. You know, don't let it happen in your state. Let's take a couple of calls. On the wildcard line, Elisa in Portland. Hi, Elisa. You're on with Dane Wigington.
Hello. The chemtrails up here where I live in the Pacific Northwest, they've become like really heavy crisscross, I'd say 5 out of 7 days a week, and I've been having breathing problems. My primary care says it's not an allergist. He said maybe try chiropractic or acupuncture. Do you know anything about that or any way to relieve some of the symptoms from the chemicals?
Well, certainly. I mean, I hear from people all over the globe because of my website, geoengineeringwatch.org. We're a global hub on this. But yes, we're hearing about, in the last 5-6 months, a radical increase in aerosol spraying activities around the globe, and it's certainly a problem. And all that stuff that's settling down and clogging up your respiratory system, George, these same materials, they coat the surface of the solar panels. They're reflective materials. So that's one more, and that tends to deflect some of the sun that would otherwise be used for generating power. So it's bad for us, bad for solar power, blocks the sun, bad deal all the way around.
Thanks, Elisa. Appreciate it. Mike in Clearwater, Florida, you're on with Dane. What's on your mind?
Hi, Dane. I don't know if you've heard about what's happening here, but we're in Florida. I was asked not to mention the company, but the wonderful folks in our state legislature several years ago passed a law that allows power utilities in this state to collect an advanced fee under the guise that they're going to use the money to build a nuclear plant, and come to find out, they don't even have to build the plant, and they get to keep all the money. Up to $1.5 billion in advance fees were collected. So, you know, I do believe it's a power grab and a control thing. And I also think that, you know, a lot of these power utilities probably are very cozy with the folks, the Public Service Commission, the very same folks that are supposed to regulate the utilities, oftentimes have people that worked in the utility industry sitting on their board. So, you know, it's kind of like asking the wolf to guard the chicken house. And I'd like to see, you know, what your thought is on the stuff that I just talked about.
That particular circumstance, I'm not versed enough with the comment, but the overall scenario, absolutely. Where do we not see that? It's everywhere. So we have the foxes running the hen house in every aspect. Now, in regard to the sky, sun, solar, and so forth, even down to meteorologists, they're nothing more than script readers right now. I mean, when you have solar power, as any of us do off the grid, you know, you care about what the next day's forecast will be. You kind of build your day around that, for example. So now when we get forecasts from the Weather Channel, for example, of mostly sunny, we know what that means. I can't pump water. I can't use my solar power because mostly sunny means we're going to have grid patterns the next day. So, you know, you have this in this case, we have Raytheon does all the weather modeling for National Weather Service and NOAA. So the fox running the hen house, as you just described. Lockheed Martin does all the weather modeling for FAA. So you have those doing the weather modification, doing the weather modeling. And when you live off grid, you know, it's a problem when you don't have very many sunny days anymore. And we don't. We don't have too many clear sunny days anymore. So, you know, again, it's just one more aspect on top of everything else we've gone over that is hitting the solar industry hard.
Thanks, Mike. You know, we've got a plant that's going up here in Nevada. It's called Crescent Dunes. The company is called Solar Reserve. They got the last of the loans on the program, the government loan guarantee program. The U.S. government will earn about $300 million in interest payments because this thing is ahead of schedule. It's under budget. It's an amazing system. I've been up to the plant a couple of times, and they use molten salt as sort of as their battery so they can generate power even after the sun goes down. It's an amazing thing, but, you know, like everything else, it gets politicized. People don't like Obama, so they kill the program that funded this thing. This technology will be exportable. These guys will be able to generate jobs and income by exporting the technology and their expertise to Saudi Arabia, South Africa. It's a pretty amazing thing, but, you know, that program's come to an end.
Let me give you an example of the kind of corruption. This is why I left Bechtel Power as well, but I worked on the first coal gasification plant in the U.S. in Daggett, California in the early 80s, and that would have turned coal into a more viable resource and a less polluting resource. As soon as that plant was done, and that plant cost nearly $1 billion, as soon as it was functional, it was torn down to the bare field and shipped to China. And I don't know that another one's been built since. So is this attempt to, you know, hide technology that could make a better situation, or, you know, back to the solar, why in the world would we, the panels that last are guaranteed for 25 years. Most solar panels are guaranteed for 25 years. It's hard to find anything guaranteed anywhere near that long. I mean, it's a viable technology. Same thing that that we see from the corporate industrial complex, especially in regard to fossil fuel. Anything that competes with them, they eventually beat it
crush
down.
Crush it.
Yep.
Yeah. Try to get one more quick call in. Keith, who is trucking through Wisconsin. Hey, Keith, better make it a quick one here. We got just a couple of minutes.
Hey, George, we are the creatures of the night. Still salute you, even though I talked to you last night. I got a question about the, you're talking about countries cutting subsidies for solar power. If an industry is profitable, why subsidize it at all?
Well, those subsidies often go toward getting the individuals or the residents to put out the money to purchase these panels, to give them the incentive to purchase the panels. So it's not necessarily going directly to the industries building the panels. It can go to the end line, to the consumers, to get them to take this step. You know, just as, so it's and those companies, with some exceptions, as ones we know of that we've seen on the headlines that the Obama subsidized, so forth, and you know, with panel designs that weren't really functional,
was
right, that went under.
Yeah.
I think what the guys, Keith, what the guys at Solar Reserve, the Crescent Dunes plant, told me is that their technology is new. I mean, that whole salt thing, they're demonstrating it to the world, and they would have had trouble getting financing. So the federal government backed the loan. They went and were able to get a loan somewhere. And once this thing is up and running, it'll be a lot easier to get financing in the future. But if we want to talk about subsidies, how about the hundreds of billions of dollars that we taxpayers are subsidizing for oil,
correct,
for nuclear, for gas, industries that are making money hand over fist? We are still giving them tax breaks and subsidies.
Correct. And we have, and profitability, George, let me give an example. I worked in the SEGS plant also in Daggett, California. That's a parabolic mirror, heats oil. And that type of facility, it's a solar plant, but that type of solar facility, again, as I mentioned earlier, 3% reduction in solar direct radiance can be a 20% reduction in their power. So what do we have? We have a 25-30% reduction in direct solar radiance, and with a reflected light, that plant's losing most of its ability to generate power. Hard to be profitable at that point when skies are being blocked from these climate programs, rendering those plants unprofitable. Again, everything connects. Everything connects. There's a lot of factors in this equation.
By the way, Keith, thank you for calling in again. And Dane, you don't sound very optimistic. I mean, do we have hope? Do the regular folks have hope if we fight back, or is it futile?
I believe if we look at hard data, George, we face challenges as of yet unimaginable to most, that our media has shielded them from this. But I would argue this: if you're standing in the middle of the interstate, no matter how dangerous it is, you're better off facing traffic than turning your back toward it. So I say we all face the reality and deal with it as best we can.
You're not going back. I mean, the fact that you've got a certain amount of energy independence, you're happy you made that move despite all the challenges, right?
I'm happy I made the move, but for example, in our area, it's, the best power generation of all off-grid is hydro. You cannot beat hydro, can't beat it. And when, for example, in my area, over the last 7 years, we're 200 inches of rain short where I live, 200. So, you know, I had a meeting with the lieutenant governor at the Capitol 8 weeks ago to discuss the same climate engineering programs that are absolutely positively blocking precipitation from California. And, you know, that affects the hydro. The state's losing a lot of money from its hydro generation, as are other countries that are being subjected to these same programs. So, you know, it has hit me hard, but I'm certainly not going back. I'm staying off the grid, absolutely. And I think, you know, it's still a viable step.
For most Americans, though, there's no chance that you can rely on your own hydropower source. You know, it just not a practical alternative. But solar is something we could try. Put some of those things on your roof. I still don't know what the total investment would be, and you cast doubt on what...
Depends on the home. Depends on the size of the home, the size of the system you want, you know, and without subsidies, it starts to get pricier. You know, they're doing everything they can, it seems, to break the back of this industry, and you know, you can relate it to all the things I said, because they're all connected. I mean, these countries cut their subsidies, they cut their assistance to help residents hook up, when at the same time they ramped up their climate modification.
Dane Wigington, thanks for joining us. I appreciate it. Despite the gloomy nature of your remarks, it's facts that we need to hear. Thanks.
Reality is a bitter pill.
All right. I encourage people to check out the link. We've got it on our Coast to Coast website. Thanks for being with us. We shift gears now to another big power source, the big agriculture, big meat, and the kind of food that we're all eating, where it comes from. Stay with us. Much more to come here on Coast to Coast.